Avrakatos's job title was Acting Chief of the South Asia Operations Group. It was a big job with responsibility for, in addition to Afghanistan, India, Pakistan, Iran, and Sri Lanka. Though he was little more than a caretaker, Avrakatos marched in with none of the caution of a lame duck. He figured that however many months he had in this job, he was going to use it to make a difference in the Mujahideen's war. No one was asking for heroics from the temporary chief. McGaffin had told Avrakatos that the agency's job was not to think about winning, but to make the Soviets bleed. "It wasn't a defeatist attitude," says Avrakatos. "It was positive, making the enemy hemorrhage. But I don't play ball that way. It's either black or white, win or lose. I don't go for a tie." In Islamabad, Howard Hart viewed Avrakatos's promotion with almost as much disgust as he had Charlie Wilson's entry into the war. "I had known Gust for years and never liked him. He's just a horrible man. Had I stayed on much longer, I would have gone to Chuck Cogan and said it's either him or me." Talking to Hart about Avrakatos is like hearing an old Yale alumnus bewail the entry of women into the hallowed halls. "Most of us were fourth-generation Dartmouth types," he explained. Hart did, however, acknowledge one area where Avrakatos excelled. Whether it was the black market or negotiating with a corrupt communist official, no one could cut a better deal. And from day one, without asking for a penny more from Congress, he began to dramatically increase the purchasing power of the agency's weapons budget, just by introducing a bit of competitive shopping. This is something of a euphemism, given the way Avrakatos operates when he goes to buy almost anything. Years later, when he joined Wilson on a congressional fact-finding mission to Baghdad, he hovered all afternoon in the main bazaar, haggling over a prayer rug. Wilson, whose personal style calls for big tipping and a generous manner, was always appalled by his friend's ferocity over the cost of trinkets. On this afternoon in Saddam Hussein's capital, Avrakatos waited until the bazaar had emptied out and then, with an evil stare, presented the merchant with a virtual threat. "This is a fair offer. You either take it or you won't have a single sale tomorrow." The merchant succumbed, and Avrakatos gloatingly explained to the unhappy congressman that Muslim merchants are superstitious and feel it critical to begin and end the day with a successful sale. "If you know when to move, you can make them feel it's not only bad luck for their business, but bad luck for their family as well." When Avrakatos had started working with McGaffin in 1983, this compulsive bargainer had made the rounds of 7 CIA stations, explicitly looking for ways to make an end run around the agency's procurement specialists. From his point of view, the 450-man Covert Action Procurement and Logistics Division always found the least risky and therefore the most expensive way of buying weapons on the black market. There was an art to getting a good deal with these merchants of death, and it did not include paying whatever price they attached to a weapon or a supply of ammunition. By the time Avrakatos came into the picture, the procurement operatives were buying just about any Lee Enfield 303 ammunition available on the world market. The agency had already slipped more than 100,000 of these World War I vintage rifles to the Afghans. It takes an enormous amount of ammunition to feed that many rifles, and the procurement people weren't able to get as much as the Mujahideen needed. The bigger problem was the cost. Once the arms merchants caught on to the agency's appetite for this obsolescent ammunition, the price soared. And, to Avrakatos's disgust, his procurement colleagues simply paid it. He looked into the records and found that the agency's first buys were for 3 cents a round, but then it doubled to 6, and when they discovered we were coming back every 3 months, it went to 12 cents. When it hit 18 cents, I said, "We're being taken." Through one of his old Greek military buddies, Avrakatos learned of 40 million rounds stored in a Yugoslav mushroom cave, which represented almost half of what Howard Hart needed to fill his annual budget for the Mujahideen that year. It was a perfect setup. The Yugoslav army wanted money and didn't like Russians. The farmers wanted their caves back so they could grow mushrooms. And all the agency had to do was provide phony end-user certificates so that it would look as if the ammo was going to someone other than the Americans. Instead of 18 cents a round, Gust was able to buy the stash for 7 cents a round. It was a mini coup. "The Office of Logistics didn't like this deal because it was embarrassing," remembers Avrakatos. but I never cut them off completely because they have ways of getting back at you. So I'd throw a little their way and say, okay, we're getting 303 rounds for 7 cents. Let's see what you can do. Avrakatos now began asking his friends at stations around the world to work their military sources to find out what else was available. It's not what spies usually do, but I figured we have the contacts and who is better at finding what's available. It was during this time that he supervised a nerve-wracking operation centered on a Polish general ready to sell Soviet SA-7 surface-to-air missiles to the Americans. This called for lifting these tightly guarded weapons from right under the nose of the Red Army, which was then more or less occupying Poland. My hair turned white on this operation because of the risks we were taking, remembers Avrakatos. If the guerrillas could acquire Soviet SA-7s, they could achieve a breakthrough in their war. The weapon might enable them to bring down the murderous Hind helicopter. The fear at Langley, however, was that the general might be part of a KGB sting. That was the year that Ronald Reagan branded the Soviet Union the Evil Empire. It was the height of the Cold War, and high-ranking Polish, East German, and Czech military men were all assumed to be either loyal communists or under the control of those who were. And beyond that, the general's demands were strange. He had signed off on a particularly high-risk operation. He would remove the missiles from their containers, put stones in their place, and sneak the SA-7s out of the country under false labels. In return, he wanted money. But more important, he told his CIA contact, he wanted to know if the agency would put up a tombstone in Quebec in honor of his grandfather. The general's explanation was that the old man had gone to Canada in the 1930s when he couldn't find work in Poland. He had sent money home to take care of his family, and when he returned years later, he had filled his grandson, the future general, with a sense of the wonder of Canada and a hatred for what the communists had done to enslave Poland. To many, this might sound a bit like those Cold War stories that used to appear in the Reader's Digest, so corny that it's suspect. But to Avrakatos, that was the way things worked in the real world. His own father had gone to America to find a job and had sent money to support his family back in Greece, just like the general's grandfather. The story had a plausible ring to it, particularly after Gust had the Canadian service do a check confirming that the grandfather had once lived in Quebec. There were also other things that made Avrakatos buy the general's story. He could remember, as if it were yesterday, those captive nation rallies he had attended as a boy, and all those drunken nights at the political clubs in Aliquippa, listening to the Polacks swear to liberate their motherland. It made perfect sense to Avrakatos that there could be a general in Warsaw who wanted nothing more than to stick it to the Red Army and to honor his grandfather. In his typical compulsion to reduce human truths to a sexual analogy, Avrakatos explains, "You just have to find out what a person has a hard-on for and give it to them." So often money was not the determining factor. What Avrakatos knew from so many experiences was that you can never underestimate the cravings of the human spirit. In the small Canadian town in the Lake Superior region, it never occurred to the local stonemason that there was anything unusual about the request from the innocent American to chisel a tombstone for his Polish grandfather. A plot in a pretty cemetery was chosen, and once the tombstone was erected, the bereaved American snapped two rolls of film with his 35mm Nikon. By the time Gust's special courier had rushed them to Warsaw, the deal was done. Soon, the Soviet SA-7s were in the CIA's pipeline on their way to Afghanistan. But Avrakatos was not content to limit his role to haggling over the cost of war material. As he saw it, now that he was acting chief, his task was to find ever more ingenious ways to kill and maim Soviets, and he knew just whom to turn to for help.